Hello and welcome to the audio transcription of The Back Page,
the Talking Sports newspaper,
dated the 2nd to the 8th of October 2019. Produced by Vista. Telephone 0116 249 8839. Items are selected, read and recorded by the Gartry Audio Services team. The team members this week are
Andrew,
Daniel,
Jeff,
Ian,
Lee,
Malcolm
and Marcel.
City news.
A defeat, yes, but City sure they're more than ready to sit at the top table.
Liverpool 2, Leicester City 1.
There are no reservations at the top table, says Jurgen Klopp, but just as Leicester City went to take their seat, he swiped the chair from under them. However, there is a determination about Brendan Rodgers and his side, and they will get up, dust themselves down, and be dining with the big boys come May. At least Klopp certainly thinks so. He said,
"Nearly everybody will feel during the season that if they get a point against Leicester, they've been successful. It was a difficult week with a really intense game on Wednesday against Red Bull Salzburg in the Champions League, and then a really strong opponent like Leicester City, who did not have to play in Europe. Not yet. Next year they will."
Of late, Liverpool have been gorging on points, are now up to 17 straight league wins, but City have come closest to denying them a full meal. Anfield has been a raucous red fortress ever since Claude Puel's City clinched a point back in January, and, as they did at Stamford Bridge and Old Trafford, Rodgers' men approached tentatively, hoping to sneak in and ransack the hosts, rather than confidently steal a victory. As at Chelsea and Man United, it was a poor first-half display. City were overwhelmed by Liverpool's press and resorted to launching long balls to Jamie Vardy. They defended stoutly against a menacing attack, but there were still chances for the hosts, Sadio Mane coolly converting the most clear-cut of the opportunities after latching on to James Milner's superb curled pass around Johnny Evans. But, as it did at Chelsea and Manchester United, City's unknockable belief shone through, and they battled back into the game. In the first hour, City's forward pass completion was 59%. In the final half hour, it was 79%. It led to three chances. Jamie Vardy miscontrolling after Mark Albrighton's brilliant ball set him through, Dennis Pratt whistling a shot wide, then James Maddison plunging the equaliser under Adrian. It was not enough for a result, and the final shot count, 18-2, indicated that Liverpool were worthy of the 3 points. But City could leave with their heads held high and confident of fulfilling Klopp's prophecy. The chair-swiping moment came in the 95th minute, Milner converting a spot kick after Mane had been tripped by Albrighton. As with every significant decision, there were multiple viewpoints. It was an obvious penalty, says Klopp. It was soft, says Rodgers. It was a dive, says Match of the Day pundits. This was all unnecessary bluster. Albrighton kicked Mane's ankle and threw his hands up to protest his innocence. A sure sign contact had been made. And while the Liverpool forward theatrically threw himself to the floor, he had been impeded. The VAR review confirmed the referee's decision. It was not the first time that the video official had been called upon. Trent Alexander-Arnold scraped his studs down Yuri Tillemans' ankle and a check was called for a red card. It was painful for the Belgian, but was completely unintentional and could not be classified as reckless or dangerous. It has to be said, the officials called all of the big decisions correctly. But the 95th minute penalty heightened emotions on both sides, and those spilled over after the final whistle. Andy Robertson dug his elbow into Ayoze Perez's ribs, the Spaniard retaliated with a push, and kick-started an ill-tempered melee that only ended when Tillemans dragged his infuriated teammate away. The emotion shown by Perez in that incident will have helped him win over supporters, with plenty still questioning if he is worth the £30 million City paid after a goalless start to his career at the King Power Stadium.
Tigers news.
I want to find the next thing I can put my whole heart into.
David Denton is sitting across the table looking fit and healthy. We could easily be looking ahead to Leicester Tigers' forthcoming Premiership Cup clash with Exeter Chiefs. But as the rugby world now knows, Denton will not be involved, forced into retirement at the age of 29 due to the concussion he sustained in a Premiership match against Northampton Saints at Twickenham last October. Denton's career came to an abrupt halt, arguably when he was at the height of his powers. He had made an impressive start to life with Tigers after moving from Worcester Warriors. He had also racked up 42 Scotland caps. But the concussion symptoms just would not go away, and rather than risk his long-term health, Denton knew it was time to step away. "I have looked fit and healthy the whole time, and that's the tough thing mentally," he explained. "The stigma around concussion has changed recently, and that is a massive positive step for rugby. But for the last 11 months, I've been coming into training looking like I'm ready to play, and there's nothing wrong with me. I've never had any pressure from the club or the boys. Everyone has been really understanding. But in yourself, you feel self-conscious about it. If someone is coming in on crutches and they have ruptured their Achilles, they are rehabbing. That is what you do. But for me, it was weird. A lot of the time, I was self-led. I'd come in and do some work on the bike and see if that helped, but I wasn't progressing. It had been incredibly frustrating, but we have come to the end of the road now, and I'm devastated to stop playing rugby. I've been incredibly lucky to play at the professional level for the last 10 years, and I've had to stop earlier than I wanted, but this is something I couldn't control. I have to move on, and it's one chapter in my life that is closed now. The feeling is probably all the more acute with the Rugby World Cup having been launched in Japan in the past week, a tournament Denton would have most certainly been involved in had fitness allowed. "It's very disappointing," he said. "It is interesting watching as a fan. I'm really looking forward to just being a rugby fan again, but I'm not there yet. I watched the first few games and it is tough. At the last World Cup, I didn't realise how much it meant to me until the start of the first game, when you walk out for the anthems and the World Cup music is blaring in the background. That was the moment when I realised this is what I have been watching since I was 6 years old and the tournament I always wanted to play in. And this year I didn't realise how much I wanted to be there until I watched the boys working out. It would be so nice to be involved. There is no sense in me fretting over things that I can't control." The hard-running back rower said he had a feeling soon after sustaining the injury that there could be a major problem, as he worked with Tigers in Scotland to try and regain full fitness. "There were points early on when I felt this could be a lot more serious than we thought," he explained. "I got injured in October and I just assumed I would at least play Tigers' last Heineken Cup game before the autumn tests. I had worked my way back into a starting role in the Scotland team and it was disappointing for me to go up there and not be able to contribute immediately. I assumed I would be playing. Every week I was preparing for games. I prepped to play for Leicester that European week against Skirlitz, but I came in and did my bike work, and I felt as though I was going to faint afterwards. Then I went up to Scotland camp. I tried it there, and it didn't happen. Leicester told me to take 3 weeks off. I tried that, and it didn't work. We kept pushing and pushing, and I kept getting knocked back until I sat down with Jody, head coach Jordan Murphy, and Ed Hollis, Tigers head of medical services, and they said, and this was fantastic from the club, "We are concerned about your long-term career as well as your long-term health. Take the rest of the season off and get back for the first week of pre-season." I went back to South Africa and got a lovely mental break and started feeling slightly better. However, there was no improvement as he returned for pre-season training and Denton had to withdraw from contention for the World Cup. "I said it wasn't worth the risk to my career to push going to the World Cup, and at that point I kind of knew," said Denton. "I had spoken to my neurologist and he said, 'If you're not better by the next time I see you, the conversation is probably going to tell you to stop playing.'" At 29, there was still the potential for Denton to play a lot of rugby. Did he ever consider going against the evidence he was given? "The thing that worked to my advantage was that I was older and I'm more experienced," he said. "It was never a risk I was going to take. I've had a career I'm really proud of and I really enjoyed, and it wasn't worth the risk. And I don't think it is ever worth the risk, but I could see my younger self thinking it would be. It is a concern that younger players might do that. I don't think in the current environment around rugby that they would, but you can see why their incentives would be more aligned to doing that." The decision, the correct one, was taken, and Tigers and rugby fans across the world will miss Denton for his quality on the field and his class off it. And, as they say, as one door closes, another one opens. "I've explored a few avenues in terms of commercial side of rugby," Denton said. "I've spent some time with the commercial team at Tigers, which has been fantastic, and I've spent a lot of time with the commercial team at Scottish Rugby, and they've been brilliant, not only in opening avenues in that industry for me, but also helping me to meet people who could help me move into something else. I'm not 100% sure, but at the moment it looks like I'm probably looking to get out of rugby completely. There is potential I would like to come back eventually, but I want to cut my teeth in something else and prove to myself, if nothing else, that there's more to me than just this. Whichever avenue Denton heads down, he will show the same level of commitment he demonstrated as a player. "Whatever I choose to do, I want to commit to," he said. "For the last 15 years, I've committed to one thing, and that's playing rugby. Now I want to find the next thing that I can put my whole heart into, because that is what can set me apart from other people."
Defensive solidarity shines through in face of adversity for heartening win. Powerful Tigers display keeps Bath at bay despite 52nd minute dismissal. Premiership Cup. Bath 7, Leicester Tigers 18. For a second consecutive week, Leicester Tigers players were left to look back on a job well done after fighting their way to an 18-7 win over Bath at the Rec in the Premiership Cup. As was the case in their previous outing, the 27-7 win over Exeter Chiefs, victory was again built around a huge defensive effort. It was all the more impressive this time around, however, as Tigers had to play much of the second half with 14 men after Australia hooker Tatafu Polatanau had been red carded on 52 minutes for a high challenge on the Bath scrum half Will Chudley, with Leicester holding on to a 15-7 lead. Bath were enjoying the best spell of the game at that point, and it was a backs-to-the-wall scenario for the visitors, who suddenly looked as though they could leave the West Country empty-handed after putting in an excellent first 40 minutes when they built up a healthy 15-0 lead. It wasn't to be the case, though. Tigers maintained their line speed in defence and gave Bath little, if any, room to which to work. In fairness, they created little in the way of clear opportunities all afternoon, and their solitary try came from an eagle-eyed interception by winger Levi Davis on 45 minutes. There was the odd line break, but by and large, Tigers' tackling and sheer desire at the breakdown kept Bath in check and gradually stifled any threat. It was telling that it was the visitors who finished the afternoon on top too. Davis succumbed to a leg injury after 70 minutes, and with all their replacements used, Bath lost their numerical advantage for the closing stages. That appeared to spur on Leicester, who duly took control of the ball and pushed Bath back into their own 22. As the clock ran down, Tigers went through the phases: back row replacements, Hanro Lindenberg and Ifirimi Bolodau getting through a stack of work before fly half Tom Hardwick dropped a goal to just about close proceedings. As good as Tigers' defensive efforts were, they also bared their claws often enough in attack to unsettle their hosts. Hardwick put them ahead with a penalty after 13 minutes, and that was a lead Leicester were not to give up. It was extended on 18 minutes when prop Greg Bateman, who had an outstanding game, burst into the Bath 22 and found the support of flanker Tommy Raphael, who went over for the first try of the match to give Tigers an 8-0 lead. 10 minutes later, they had a second try, this time scrum half Ben White fighting his way through the home defence to touchdown, Hardwick converting for a 15-0 advantage. Tigers held that going into the break, but Bath responded with Davis' opportunist try, which looked like being the catalyst for a home revival. It wasn't to be the case, though. Tigers kept their shape and their discipline to bank a well-earned win, which leaves them in second place in the pool, a point behind Exeter. Leicester now round off their group matches on Saturday when Northampton Saints pay a visit to Welford Road. Nobody will need pumping up for that one, and in their current mindset, Tigers will be relishing the opportunity to put one over their neighbours to head into the Gallagher Premiership on a hugely encouraging note.
Basketball.
Strong start to defence of WBBL Trophy.
Leicester Riders women opened up their WBBL campaign with a pair of victories in the WBBL Trophy, which has earned them a semi-final spot as they look to retain the trophy. The start of the campaign was a three-day tournament at the University of Essex, which provided the pool stages of the trophy. Riders showed they will not be giving up their prize silverware in a hurry, underlining their strength in depth with a crushing 90-58 victory against Auckland's Wolves. Great Britain international Ella Clark was in terrific form, with a double-double of 15 points and 16 rebounds, while four of her teammates also returned double digits, led by 19 from Sarah Hendriksdottir. For Auckland, Aneka Schluter top scored with 19 points. Wolves battled hard to contain Riders, trailing just 46-39 at half-time. But Riders then turned the screw in the third quarter, outscoring Auckland's 23-10, and they were even more dominant in the final period, winning it 23-9. Riders then continued their bright start to the new campaign by overwhelming Cardiff Met Archers 75-43. Cardiff stayed in touch in the first quarter, trailing 21-15, but Riders' extra height was proving too much for the Welsh side, as Riders eased away to a 38-23 half-time lead. Leicester dominated the third period to overwhelm Cardiff 25-5 and put the result beyond doubt. American Bree Elmore became the first WBBL player this season to dish up double digits in assists after handing out 10. She also pulled down 11 rebounds. Australian centre Kate Oliver shone brightly for Riders as well, after contributing 17 points and 11 rebounds. The Riders are now through to the semi-finals along with Nottingham Wildcats, Durham Palatinates and Sevenoaks Suns. The semi-finals will be played in mid-February, with the final on Sunday, March the 15th at the Emirates Arena in Glasgow.
Josh and Jamal are Riders' dynamic duo.
Ward Hibbert and Anderson praised as team stays unbeaten.
Leicester Riders head coach Rob Paternostro believes his team are showing excellent early season form, despite being under strength after a comprehensive 96-57 victory over Manchester Giants. Riders remain undefeated and top their group in the BBL Cup after another defensive masterclass. Josh Ward-Hibbert was once again star man, scoring 20 points and pulling down 13 rebounds, while Jamal Anderson top scored with 21 points, including 4 of 8 three-pointers. Kyron Cartwright had a double-double with 14 points and 11 assists. Once again, Riders' ball movement stood out, with 26 assists recorded to just 12 for Manchester. Paternostro said, "We have found Manchester's venue a tricky place to play in the past, and we had to overcome that, and I thought the guys did that well. Whether the shots are dropping, you can always play defence, and we were exceptional, holding them to just 20 points in the first half. We were down bodies, and our new American, not having his visa, Rima Lasales, out with a back spasm, and of course Mo Walker still not available. But the other guys stepped up once again. Jamal Anderson and Josh Ward-Hibbert were the dynamic duo for both wings. And I thought Kyron Cartwright, who struggled with an ankle injury for over a week, was just sensational, once again controlling the game, dishing out 11 assists and making a big contribution on offence. We are far from the finished article, but I like how we are progressing as a team. Next up for Riders is another group match in the BBL Cup against arch-rivals Newcastle Eagles at the Morningside Arena, Leicester, on Friday,
7:30 p.m.
Riders' home fixture in the group stages of the BBL Cup against Manchester Giants has been rearranged to Saturday, October the 26th at the Morningside Arena,
7:30 p.m.
It was originally scheduled for the night before.
Rocks avenge their home defeat by the Eagles. Elsewhere in the BBL Cup, following their win last week over cup holders London Lions, Worcester Wolves managed to edge host Surrey Scorchers 83-77. American Cortez Edwards led the way for Wolves with 22 points, 9 rebounds and 5 assists. Jordan Williams was also key in Wolves' victory, picking up a double-double of 16 points and 12 rebounds. London City Royals also picked up their second win in their first home game of the season, demolishing Bristol Flyers 84-57. GB international Andrew Lawrence continued to impress as he picked up a double-double with 19 points and 12 rebounds, and was also assisted by teammate Matthew Scott, who contributed 20 points and 8 rebounds. Glasgow Rocks achieved an early win against the Newcastle Eagles with a thrilling 73-71 overtime win, avenging their home defeat by the Eagles a week before. The Rocks rallied behind an impressive double-double from their new signing Maxim Joe Ibala, posting 26 points and 15 rebounds, combining with point guard Greg Pryor, who tallied 22 points, 8 rebounds and 9 assists. Sheffield Sharks picked up their second win of the season with a 75-60 home win over Cheshire Phoenix. Cheshire attempted a fourth quarter comeback, and 5 unanswered points late on from Phoenix saw the Sharks' lead shrink to just 1 point. But game MVP Mackie McKnight answered back, knocking down a pair of free throws, and Sharks followed that up with a 3-point jump shot from Nick Lewis and a 2-point layup from McKnight to see Sharks ease to victory.
The Rob Paternostro column. Our opponents are having to fight very hard for nearly every basket. We continue to progress as a team with our undefeated start, thanks to another comprehensive victory last weekend over Manchester Giants. Once again, our dynamic British forwards, Josh Ward-Hibbert and Jamel Anderson, continue to play at the best level they ever have. They are very tough defensively, but are also offensive threats from inside and out. Ward-Hibbert never gives up on any play, chasing every loose ball, and is proving himself capable of keeping defences off balance at all times, while Anderson is showing the benefit of all the work he has put in over the summer. Kyron Cartwright had another exceptional effort, particularly recognised he has been carrying an ankle injury from opening night. Kyron has a way of pulling the strings offensively and involving all our players, which is inspiring. But this time, he also kept the Giants honest by knocking down some shots. He is a magician and a delight to coach. We were 3 men down for this game, but other guys stepped up, and the first half defensive display was very satisfying, holding the Giants to just 20 points in the first half and 31% shooting from the floor for the game. It is early in the season, and teams sometimes struggle to build rhythm on offense. But we are making teams fight very hard for nearly every basket. We are nicely positioned in our group in the BBL Cup, but won't be getting ahead of ourselves because a number of teams are short-handed and will strengthen. It's great to get off to a 3-0 start, particularly with 2 of the games on the road, because it seems likely away form will be a big factor on who finds a way to get through the competition. But with 4 teams from each group qualifying for the quarterfinals, I like where we are at, particularly with a big game coming up on Friday against Newcastle Eagles. The Eagles lost their leader, Fab Flournoy, in the summer to a position in the NBA with the champions Toronto Raptors, and we all wish him well in the next stage of his career. It will be very odd playing the Eagles without Flournoy's presence, because he has defined them as a club for nearly 2 decades. But the Eagles have always valued continuity and have promoted from within their coaching structure, while retaining a core of experienced players from last season. First and foremost is their point guard, Ramon Fletcher, a 2-time BBL MVP. We know well how good a player he can be, one of the best in the BBL. But their British centre, Darius Defoe, also brings a wealth of experience to their front line. They have recruited well in the off-season and have a good size up front, so will pose a different test for us. This is particularly the case with Mo Walker, expected to continue to be out, Jesse Chukwu continuing his steady return to full fitness, and doubts still around about when the visa will come through for our new signing, American forward Zoran Talley. We are evolving into a slightly different team than I anticipated in the summer, forced by circumstances, but I really like the way guys like Ward-Hibbert and Anderson are adjusting to the demands. Those guys are great athletes and capable of grabbing rebounds under a lot of pressure from bigger opponents, and they are plugging the gap well. In transition, we can be a formidable team, driven by the pace of Cartwright and his exceptional ability to read defences. There remains a long way to go in the BBL Cup, but Friday will give us a good measure of where we are at in building to face the challenges ahead.
Riders chasing the game all night, but slipped to first defeat.
BBL Cup North Group. Leicester Riders 88, Newcastle Eagles 96.
Leicester Riders suffered their first defeat of the season, going down to Newcastle Eagles in the BBL Cup. Riders were playing catch-up throughout after an explosive start by the Eagles, and, without the injured Maurice Walker, lacked the size to keep Newcastle off the offensive glass in the first half. Former league MVP Ramon Fletcher was sensational all night, and he set his stall out early with a 3-pointer in the opening play, and an and one drive to make it 6-1 inside the first minute. Newcastle's superior height meant almost every shot they missed in the early stages turned into a second-chance opportunity. But with Jesse Chukwu showing his all-round defensive game at the other end, Leicester were level at 12-all. 6 points from Naimon Wright made it 24-25, but the visitors hit 3-pointers either side of the first quarter break to open a 39-29 advantage early in the second quarter. While scoring well enough, Riders could not stop Newcastle, and at the interval, the Eagles had posted 57 points, more than Sheffield managed in the entire previous game at Morningside Arena, and the most an away team had scored against the Riders since February 2015. Threes from Fletcher and Rodney Glasgow to start the second half had the Eagles' lead out to 14, although Josh Ward-Hibbert, continuing his good start to the season, briefly got the arrears in single figures. Another Fletcher long-range effort to end the third period saw Riders staring down the barrel of a 15-point deficit, and 2 minutes into the fourth, it was 89-70. But Leicester then made a charge, scoring 14 of the next 17 points, to put themselves within striking distance at 84-92. They had their chances to cut it further in the final 2 minutes, but were unable to get closer when Newcastle ran out deserved winners. Chukwu, 20, and Kieran Cartwright, 19, both posted their best points tally so far in a Riders shirt, with Cartwright adding 10 assists. Ward-Hibbert posted a fourth consecutive double-double, with 15 points and 12 rebounds, as well as 6 assists and 3 steals.
Angling.
Cliff emerges winner in tight vets match on Marina Lake. There was just £10 between the top 5 anglers when Lakeview Vets held a match on Marina on September the 25th. Cliff Adcock, fishing Golden Peg 21, took the match with £57. He caught mainly in the margins with pellet and corn, catching the majority of his fish late on in the match. On Peg 23, Martin Quilter was not far behind with £51 for second place. Catching close in on maggot, he lost a couple of good-sized carp, which cost him the match. Third and section winner was Steve Fletcher on Peg 19. He had £47 with a good mixed bag, including a lot of silverfish. The other section winner was Dirk Williams, who fished Peg 11, where he used caster and maggot to good effect and ended with £46. With a further £40 plus and some £30 weights, it proved a good match overall. And he's on a roll. Cliff Adcock is on a roll and had yet another convincing win last Saturday when he fished Peg 20 on river. Fishing pellet down the track and into the bowl, he caught £64 and left the rest standing. Second on the lake was Brian Nichols on Peg 9, where he used maggot down the track but could only manage £29. Roger Holmes completed the top three with £24. On stream, the weights were not good, but with only a few fish in the lake, the fish had plenty of space to hide. Steve Beckhurst took the lake with £29 from Peg 20, using maggot down the track. Second was Mick Atherton on Peg 13, with £28 taken on caster. Alan Ralph was third with just £13.
Athletics.
Harbour runners are part of huge field at Berlin Marathon. Harbour Athletic Club members Peter Attenborough and Simon Poynton travelled to Berlin in Germany for the 46th running of the marathon over the famously fast course. Over 46,000 completed the race, with Attenborough just missing out on a top 10,000 finish with his time of 3 hours 39 and 2 seconds, while Poynton finished his third marathon of the year in 3 hours and 58. Meanwhile, at Prestwold Hall near Loughborough, Harbour AC juniors were competing for their schools in the opening races of the County Cross Country Leagues. The first race saw intermediate girls Lizzie Clapp, Beth Wallace and Ellie McLean get their campaigns off to strong starts with 3rd, 4th and 5th places respectively. Barney Berman went one better as he took 2nd in the Y3 boys race, while Adam Barber led the intermediate boys race from the start to finish for a dominant win. There were also strong runs over the undulating course from Ava Berman, Lily Harris, Aisha Redhead, Ben Stiles, Tom Hayes and Harvey Poynton. Club chairman Will Clapp said, "It's great to see so many youngsters turning out on a Saturday morning for cross country. It's a sure sign that autumn is here. We're lucky to live in a county where there is such a thriving school cross country scene.
It gives children and young people a great opportunity to enjoy the excitement and challenges of the competition. And over the years, there's been many high-quality runners' real introduction to athletics. Who knows, some of our young runners might be winning the Berlin Marathon in a decade or two. Three Welland Valley Triathlon Club members enjoyed the sunshine in Cascais, Portugal, as they competed in the Ironman 70.3. This picturesque race near the Portuguese capital of Lisbon has a 1.9-kilometre single-lap ocean swim, followed by a 90-kilometre single-loop cycle, which runs alongside the ocean and through the Sintra forests. The 21-kilometre two-loop run course is along the coast between Cascais, Estoril and San Pedro. All three athletes completed the race, with Kate Southern seventh in her age group, while Stuart Rees and Cara Rees followed on. Closer to home, club members Neil Thornycroft, Liam Henderson and Sam Saunders took part in the Bedford Sprint Triathlon. The finish times were 1 hour 29.38, 1 hour 37.04, second in the age group, and 1 hour 39.23, second in the age group respectively. Ray Thompson finished in the East League Sprint in a time of 1:27:44, while Kenny Anderson and Fiona Thompson took part in the Northampton Half Marathon with times of 1:37:22 and 2:16:20, respectively.
Julie tops record field at Sapping 24-hour race. A field of 3,000 runners from all over the country headed to Beaver Castle for a 24-hour challenge to mark the end of summer. The seventh edition of the Equinox 24 Running Festival drew a record 650-plus solo runners, making it the largest solo field at a 24-hour race in the UK. Julie Finn capped a brilliant year for female ultra-runners by winning the race overall with a new female course record of 190 kilometres after completing 19 laps of the undulating 10-kilometre course. Second place among the women went to Holly Durham with 160 kilometres and Anna Seeley was third with 150 kilometres. The men's solo event saw some really close racing, with winner Sam Perch completing his 180 kilometres less than 2 minutes in front of Ramzi Sidani. Ricardo Giussani rounded off the podium with 170 kilometres. The other category winners were two pork pies short of a picnic in the pairs category with 260 kilometres, while in the relay event, Tion Ship aka WPS won the small team category with 330 kilometres and BRJ Awesome 8 took the large team category also with 330 kilometres. Runners could also run either the day or night 10-kilometre with both events selling out. Organisers are adding a new event, Solstice 24, next year on June the 27th and 28th on a new course around the Beaver Castle estate. Entries are already open at www.solstice24run.co.uk. Entries for next year's Equinox 24 open in October via www.equinox24.co.uk.
Cycling.
Neck and neck on first hill, but Whitmore digs deepest to take trophy. Alex Whitmore took victory in the Rathe Road Club's hill climb at Smeaton Westerby. Based over two climbs, staged an hour apart, Whitmore pipped Leicester Forest's Kenny Clive by 5 seconds for the Open Trophy. The pair were tied on 1 minute 13 seconds after the first ascent, but it was Whitmore who was able to dig deeper. He clocked 2 minutes 29 seconds for the second ride to take the trophy along with his club's honours. Third place went to Joselito Jimenez, who returned an aggregate of 4 minutes 10 seconds for the two climbs. The Women's Open Award was won by Leicester Forest's Ruby Summer Osborne, who recorded 6 minutes 32 seconds. The Rathe's Veteran Prize went to Mark Newton, Peter Cott, taking the Over 85 kilogram awards. The Leicestershire Cyclocross League is back with a packed series of races over the autumn and winter. Round 1 was staged at Corby early last month, with the league promoting round 2, which takes place at Marston Lodge on Sunday, October the 13th. The league is also promoting the East Midlands Championships, which are set for Prestwold on December the 8th. Round 5, organised by Leicester Forest at Bowman Park in November, doubles as the county championship. Each round will cater for riders from the age of 9 up to the senior category. Upcoming dates are October the 13th, Marston Lodge; October the 27th, Misterton Hall; November the 3rd, Prestwold; November the 17th, Beaumont Park; December the 29th, Cato's Farm; January the 25th, Mallory Park; January 19th, Corby; February the 9th, Misterton Hall or Marston.
Fencing.
Hungarian trip for fencing star Finn in first Euro event of season. A Frisbjørn-rik teenager is in Hungary this weekend, competing for Great Britain in the first event of the 2019-20 European fencing circuit. Finn Noble, who's 16, was selected for the tournament in Budapest after being placed 12th in the under-17 GBR rankings. GBR have taken a development squad to Hungary, and 20 EPE fencers will compete in individual and team events. British Fencing have had some success in the last 12 months, so are now providing extra fencing training at athlete development camps and different locations in England. After a pleasing start to the domestic season, Finn is now ranked number 8 on the GBR rankings. He continues to travel and train hard under coach Chris Hauser at Elite EPE in Oundle. A solid performance in Budapest could see him selected for the next event in Grenoble, France, next month. The squad will then reduce to 15 fencers, but there will still be individual and team entries.
Golf.
Court stars in PGA Cup, but efforts in vain as USA come back to win. Matthew Court was the star of the GB and Ireland PGA Cup team, which lost narrowly to the United States of America at the Barton Creek Resort and Spa in Austin, Texas. In the 29 Cup encounter, GB and Ireland were defending, but went down 14-12 to the Americans after a three-day-long struggle. Court, taking part in this historic match for the second team, ended with 4 out of 5 points, having played all 5 sessions. This was the highest points tally by any individual on either side in sweltering heat. On the first 2 days, Court was on fire, winning the 4-ball better ball and foursome matches. 1 session of each on the Friday and Saturday before the singles. GB and Ireland led going into the 10-a-side singles, and Court came tantalisingly close to getting a maximum 5 points. He had 2 big wins on day one. Partnered by Jordan Godwin in the 4 balls, they won by 5 and 4 against America's Danny Balin and Marty Jurtsen. Court had an eagle at the 8th hole and no fewer than 6 birdies. In the foursomes, Court and Alex Wrigley clashed with America's Alex Beach and Jason Kerrin and won again with another fine performance. They won by a 6 and 5 margin. But at this point, GB and Ireland trailed overall. 5-3 down at the start of day 2, but claimed a total 7 out of 8 points, including 2 more successes by Court. He and Godwin took on Beat and Kerrin in the 4 balls. It was a closer affair, but Court and Godwin finished 1 up before Court and Wrigley paired together again for the foursomes against Balin and Jurtsen. This proved to be equally tense before Court and Wrigley ended 1 up. GB and Ireland took the lead 10-6 at the end of the day after one of the best ever performances in any PGA Cup match. You had to go back to 2003 in Florida for a session that was more dominated by one side. The USA led 7.5 to 0.5 on that occasion. But clearly there was a lot to do, and as expected, Americans came out fiercely determined to claim success on their home course. In his tightly contested singles, Court was 1 down at the turn and fought equally hard throughout the second half of his game, eventually going down by a 2-1 margin to Sean McCarthy. After his early heroics, which helped to keep GB and Ireland in the match, team captain Cameron Clark said, "Matt is from the same region as me. He is such a solid player and has played great in the 2007 PGA Cup on his debut. I knew he would do a job here too." But it all ended in an overall defeat for GB and Ireland, who eventually lost the singles series 8-2. So after coming so close, they had to relinquish their hold on the coveted trophy. Court, who returned home on Tuesday, said it was a brilliant trip, but of course disappointing not to have won as a team. It was so close. I played well, so I was pleased about that, but conditions were extremely tough. It was just so hot. Even the locals said it was freakish weather for the time of the year, so it was a pretty tiring week. My caddy Alex, who was from Dallas, was very good. I took two different putters with me and happily made the right choice for the matches. I holed a couple of good putts early in the first session, and that was a real confidence booster. It was a tremendous experience for the whole team.
Double joy for Shave in Alliance meeting. Craig Shave,
Cosby,
did the double in the latest County Golf Alliance meeting at his former club, Whetstone GC. Shave shot 2 under par 68 for his haul of 38 points to finish first in the professionals' individual awards when he had birdies at the opening two holes, another at 6 and two more on the back 9, at the 14 and the last. But he saw 3 strokes slip away too. He also ended first overall with partner Mick Jordan, also of Cosby, when their 45-point total put them 2 clear of runners-up Michael Reed and Tom Hansen, both of Glen Gorse. On 43 points after a tie with Simon Mayers and Richard Lawton of Kibworth resolved on alliance rule. Neil Parker,
Humberston Heights,
and Eric Vittles,
Scraptoff,
won the Pro-Am Section Award on 43 points, with the Am-Am winners Beadles Lake pair Gerald Brooks and Andrew Alden on 42. Leicestershire and Rutland senior golfers beat the new East Midlands senior champions Cambridgeshire in their inter-county clash at Ely Golf Club. The county won 10.5 to 7.5 points, taking the 9-hole singles 3.5 to 2.5 and the 18-hole 4-ball matches 7 to 5 to achieve their success. Alan Turton,
Alisthorpe Court,
the county seniors captain, said, "This was an outstanding result for us. Again, a strong side aiming for a 100% winning record this season." John Hardwick used his experience of the course to secure maximum points alongside Paul Jelly. "Our last two pairs both battled back well from being down to secure halves in their matches to swing the match our way."
Cooper is champion of county champions.
David Cooper of Glen Gorse, a county team golfer, won the County Golf Union's Champion of Champions 36-hole tournament at Stapleford Park. Cooper shot a 3-under par 70 in his opening session to lead by 2 strokes. This was the low return of the day. Then he added 74, and his 2-under 144 aggregate saw him finish 4 clear of his nearest rival, Cameron Chalmers of Ulsthorpe Court Hotel and Golf Club, a former County Boys match play champion who carded 1-under 148 to be runner-up. Jack Malone of Lutterworth was 3rd on 151, Matthew Darby of Market Harborough 4th on 152, and George Rett of Whetston 5th with his 81 followed by 72 in his second session. In his first round, Cooper hit 7 birdies and had 4 bogeys. His birdies came at 1, 4 and 8 going out, in 1-under 35, and he came back in 2-under 35 when he birdied 10, then had 3 more in a row from the 15th hole. This is Cooper's first county major title. The end-of-season annual tournament is open to club champions from clubs within the Leicestershire and Rutland Golf Union. There were also awards for the best first and second rounds. They went to Darby for his 74 and Rett 1-under 72 respectively. No competitor could take more than one prize. Kevin Whitfield Green, the immediate past county president and county director of tournaments, presented the main trophy and other awards to the winners.
Local football.
Heavy loss can't overshadow a solid start for Harborough.
Stuart Spencer insists Harborough Town must not allow last weekend's heavy defeat at Quorn to overshadow their solid start to the season. Bees suffered a heavy 6-1 defeat in the Oulsport United Counties League Premier Division last Saturday, but still sit in the top 5 after the first 8 games. Spencer's team have also made progress into the first round proper of the Build Base FA Vars and in the UCL Knockout Cup, and the manager feels that all adds up to a start everyone at the club would have taken. It was one of those days where everything that could go wrong did go wrong, Spencer said. We conceded a bit of a freak goal after a fairly even start, and then we were down to 10 men toward the end, after we got an injury after making all our substitutions, and they scored two goals in the last few minutes, which gave the scoreline a pretty harsh complexion. The result obviously hurt on Saturday evening. It was a bad day at the office, but I don't think we should allow it to overshadow our overall start. If at the start of August someone would have given us being the top six, and still in two cup competitions, then I think we would have all taken it. It's been a solid start. We have managed through a tough period, where the players are still taking holidays and things like that, but our squad is looking good. And when you look back on the last couple of months, and you look at the league table, I think you'll see that we have already played a number of top teams already. Overall, I think we can be happy. Harborough are back at home for the next 2 weeks as they take on Anstey Nomads in the league this weekend, before hosting Enfield in the FA Vars on October the 12th. The only home game we have played in the last five was the first match in the last round of the FA Vars, so it will be nice to get back there, Spencer added. It's a decent run of games in October, and there is no reason why we should not stay in the pack, just below the top three or four during that run.
Play for Paul. Game will be a poignant event. A poignant football match is being held at Bottisford later this month to raise money for two charities. The Bottisford under-14s team from 1992 are taking on a current Bottisford veterans team on Sunday, October the 20th, in a match dubbed Play for Paul. The game kicks off at 1:30pm at Bottisford FC, but in all, there will be 7 hours of fundraising activities for local hospice Dove Cottage, a high-quality palliative daycare to people living in northeast Leicestershire, and the progressive supernuclear palsy charity PSP. The charity match is the idea of Danny Wilcock, whose father Paul has PSP, an uncommon brain disorder that affects movement, and is a regular day visitor to Dove Cottage. Paul used to referee Bottisford under-14s, so his son has brought the team back together again for a special reunion. What started off as a simple charity game has grown into a significant day of fundraising, explained Danny. There will be family activities from 12pm to 7pm, a bar, refreshments and live auction at 4pm. These are two charities that are very close to mine and other families' heart, for obvious reasons, said Danny. We have seen over the last 3 years how this horrific disease has affected my dad and our lives. The reason for the fundraiser is to raise as much money as possible to try and help other families in a similar situation by helping to ensure the right care is out there and to hopefully eventually find a cure. Dove Cottage is an amazing facility. It's great for my dad and others who use it, and it's also great for carers like my mum, as she's a 24/7 carer now. Apart from a few full-time staff, Dove Cottage is virtually run by volunteers. The match will be a poignant occasion for my family, but also to get the former Bottisford under-14s team back together again, as my dad used to referee the team. If anyone has any auction prizes they would like to donate, or any questions regarding the event, they can call Danny on
07 984 610 805
or email
DannyWilcock@hotmail.co.uk.
For further information on PSP, visit
PSPAssociation.org.uk.
Melton's 100% start to the season is ended in first away trip. Melton Town's 100% start to the All Sport United Counties League Division 1 season was ended in their first away game. After four straight home successes, scoring 14 goals and conceding none, Melton travelled to a Whittlesea side who had not won any of their first seven games. But on a windy day, the form book was thrown out of the window, with Melton crashing to a 3-1 defeat. In the first minute, Whittlesea summoned up a surprise when the aptly named Long took a long throw-in, which was headed in by Hailstone. Manship was injured in the build-up and had to be replaced by Hibbett. Melton were struggling to get out of their half due to the blustery conditions, and it took until the 15th minute before they had their first chance when Hammond played in Munton on the right side of the 6-yard box only to see his low shot flash across the goal. Then, to everyone's surprise, the hosts extended their lead. A short throw-in found Dan Redhead with time in midfield to take a shot from 30 yards out, and with the assistance of the wind, it flew into the top corner. Ilsley nearly made it three when he cut in from the right and struck a great low shot, which needed Pete to parry away. Melton had wind advantage in the second half and came out with new purpose. Hammond and keeper Pollen went up for a high cross, with the town midfielder winning the tussle, the ball landing at Mudton's feet. He turned and shot, but his effort flew inches over the bar. In the 51st minute, the pressure paid as an Arnold corner found Leon Frey unmarked in the middle of the box to guide a header past Pullen. Almost from the kickoff, the ball was sent into the box and Hammond hit a perfect strike, which smashed against the underside of the crossbar. The visitors then seemed to lose momentum as the game became a battle in the midfield, which both teams struggled against the elements and poor pitch. The killer blow arrived in the 65th minute when Story was pulled up for an off-the-ball incident in the Melton box, which resulted in a penalty. Hill Seeking struck the ball well, but Pete was down to make a great save. He also stopped the follow-up shot before Seeking's, at the third attempt, booted it under Pete's body to make it 3-1. Munton had a couple of good chances to pull the game back with some good work in the box, but no real clear chances. The game faded away and left Town very disappointed, having conceded for the first time in the league and losing their winning start. In fairness, the awful pitch and windy conditions were a leveller, but if Melton are to get promoted this season, they will need more consistency. This weekend, they have a chance to prove any doubters wrong when they welcome leaders Long Buckby. Buckby have opened the campaign with 8 straight league wins, belting 31 goals in the process. But 6th-place Melton are the only team in the division who have yet to concede a home goal.
Local rugby.
Hinckley and Leicester Lions spoil 2 unbeaten records. Hinckley confirmed their revival with a thumping 6-try, 18-36 victory over Hull at Chatterlands Avenue on Saturday. This was a previously unbeaten Hull side who had not lost at home for more than a year. So after the travails of recent weeks and the stuttering victory last week against Luctonians, it was just the sort of performance Hinckley needed. This was no runaway victory, though. After the now customary shaky start, which saw the visitors concede early, the win was built on a superb defensive effort and an abrasive forward performance that eventually ground the home side into submission. Hailing, undoubtedly, our best performance of the season, Director of Rugby Scott Hamilton said, "Defensively, we were outstanding. They had a number of big, strong runners who will walk over some teams, but we fronted up and kept them in check." The win leaves Hinckley 9th in National League 2 North. Next week, Hornets return to Leicester Road to take on 3rd from bottom Otley. Kickoff is 3 p.m. Meanwhile, Leicester Lions sit 4th in National League 2 South after a 39-20 home win over Clifton. The visitors were previously undefeated, but Lions claim victory with the help of tries from Jamal Hamilton, Devon Constant, Sam Benjamin, Max Johnson and Ed Sumpner, and conversions from Greg Lloydell. Clifton fought hard to stay unbeaten, but in the last 10 minutes of the game, Lions showed their commitment with 2 rapid tries. Lions head coach Gareth Collins said,
"We were expecting a tough game from Clifton. They gave us a testing afternoon, especially with their first half surge. I was proud of the way that the lads came back in the last 50 minutes of the game for a deserved win."
Bundles of youthful enthusiasm, but also areas for discussion.
Vipers 31, Melton RFC 9.
Melton firsts travelled to Leicester rivals Vipers with several young players in the squad. They all played with youthful desire and enthusiasm, making up for lack of experience with total commitment. Senior trio Duncan Lennox, Chris Rose and James Woolley marshalled their troops really well throughout the match, even as the players tired during the second half. Coach Mike Halford entered the fray during the latter stages and immediately shored the scrum up, which was beginning to creak a little. It would be useful in the future to have more senior players to help with the development of the talented but inexperienced playing pool. Having said that, several decisions went against them at crucial stages, which Vipers scored from, and you can't really legislate for that. Melton started brightly, moving the ball well through Archie Hutchinson to his outside backs, Harvey Green, Harry Wood, Henry Kazmarsik, and Will Garnett, who have all great pace and an eye for a gap. From one of these electric players, Melton landed a penalty through Harvey Green and nudged in front. Vipers hit back and scored from a catch and drive out wide to lead 5-3, but not for long. This time, superb work from Jake Dixon, Christian Jeremiah and Jack Forfar enabled Green to knock over a second penalty for a single-point lead. Failure to secure the ball from kick-off, which needs some attention on the training pitch, led eventually for a converted score for Vipers to regain the impetus and go 12-6 up. Melton switched off again at kick-off and found themselves defending manfully, with Dan Evans, Luke Pawley and Harry Ely in the thick of the action, stemming the tide alongside Forfar and Dixon. Green's third penalty from distance gave Melton hope, but again from kick-off they put themselves under pressure, ending with Sam Dennison being carded for bringing down a maul from the line-out following a soft penalty. Right on the stroke of half-time, Melton opted for a line-out from a penalty rather than a shot at goal, but could not secure possession and they turned round 19-9 down. The second half was littered with errors and some poor decision-making by both sides, but the home side had the general nous to clear their lines and slow the ball down almost at will, attacking with purpose in narrow channels to use their heavier forwards to good effect. Vipers scored a further 12 points without reply, although full credit to Melton, who turned down a couple of kickable penalties, to try and score tries to narrow the difference. Constant slow ball and lazy offsides, though, kept the home side in a winning position. So, some very good performances and bundles of youthful enthusiasm to work with. But there are also some areas for discussion, especially securing ball from kickoffs and game management. This week's opponents are Northampton Casuals at Burton Road, with a kickoff at 3 p.m, as Melton look forward to their first home fixture of the season.
Martial arts.
Full of Eastern promise.
Melton's multiple world Muay Thai champion, Imam Barlow, has set her sights on conquering Asia. The 26-year-old, nicknamed Pretty Killer, has signed up with a new management team and is in talks with a huge promotion company about heading east. Barlow currently holds 19 different World Muay Thai titles, and that would definitely draw the crowds anywhere across the globe, even if her dominance in Europe is making it hard for her to find opponents on her home continent. She signed a contract with new management team Worldwide Fight Management, confirmed father and coach Mark Barlow, who is unable to reveal the identity of the promoters they are speaking with. This will give her the chance to get even bigger fights. Kuala Lumpur and Tokyo are among the venues currently being mooted. The Barlows spent some time living in Thailand, where Imam was ranked number one in the country as a 15-year-old. But now she is looking to return to Asia and continue her success as a senior. Despite the hopes for bigger and better things in 2020, Barlow will still take part in two scheduled title fights. She will defend her WTKA world title against France's Cindy Sylvestre at Melton's Market Tavern on October the 12th, where a host of Assassin's Club members will be on a busy fight card. This fight could be Imam's final bout in Melton, and possibly the UK, although she will also be in action in Australia in late November. There she will meet Brooke Farrell to contest the WBC Super Bantamweight International title.
Motorsport.
Mixed Donington conditions make it tough for Tilly. It was a fairly satisfying weekend for Leicester racer Graham Tilly at Donington Park, taking his Nissan GTR GT3 to two class podiums out of the four races. It was bright and sunny for the first day of action in the GT Cup, and Tilly qualified third for the opening race. It was okay, I couldn't go quicker, but it was good after the ABS problems that we had in testing, he said. The first race was red flagged and then restarted, to Tilly's surprise. There was a long hold on the grid, and I didn't think it was going to be restarted, really, he said. As the lights went out, though, Tilly was into third behind Neary's Mercedes and Seal's Lamborghini. It only ran for six laps, so Tilly managed to retain his place for the duration, despite having Tom Webb's Lamborghini as a constant threat. For the second race, Tilly had young teen ace Will Tegertha sharing. With both Neary and Seal off on the first lap, he slotted into second behind Webb. "I was lucky to miss the first lap melee, really," he said. For a while, the Geddes Lamborghini had closed, but Tilly responded and went clear again, retaining his hold on second until lap 12. "I went into the old hairpin about 5 kilometres too quick, got into oversteer slide and onto the grass," he said after dropping to fourth. Having held onto a solid fourth, he pitted to hand over to Tagurtha after 21 laps, who had just started to make progress when he had ABS problems again. He had made it up to eighth, but a number of cars were yet to make their spots. When he braked at red car, he had problems, got sideways but just held it and then just concentrated on getting it to the finish, Tilly added after they managed to hold on to fourth. Tyre choice was the dilemma for Sunday's qualifying session. It was a drying track on cold tyres. They didn't get up to temperature, and it was oily and very slippery, he explained after qualifying eighth. Grip was at a premium still in the first of Sunday's races, but he retook Orange's Ginetta after losing out at the start and retaining fifth for third in class until the race came to a close 4 laps behind the safety car. "The conditions were appalling, damp, oil and gravel too," he said. The final race of the weekend was another pit stop race. With Tilly starting again, he settled in fifth place behind Zeela's Ferrari. "The conditions were so greasy still. Although the brakes were great, I was struggling for traction and it was on the rev limiter, so we stopped early and risked putting wheel onto slicks though," he explained. Tagurtha had climbed back to eighth after being the first to stop when, after 25 laps, his race was over when a rear wheel came off, entering the old hairpin.
Sailing.
Olympic dream continues as Fletcher earns a spot for Tokyo. Market Harbour sailor Dylan Fletcher will be heading back to the Olympic Games next year. Fletcher was one of 12 sailors named by the British Olympic Association this week as the first team GB athletes were selected for Tokyo 2020. It will be his second appearance at the Olympics after he finished in sixth place alongside Alan Sine in the 49er class in Rio in 2016. This time, he will be competing in the same class with London 2012 silver medalist Stuart Bithell. Currently ranked number one in the world, Fletcher and Bithell have become a force to be reckoned with, announcing their arrival on the circuit in 2017 with stunning wins in the 49er European and World Championships. And now they will be targeting Olympic gold when they head to Japan next year. Team GB sailing team leader and Royal Yacht Association Olympic performance manager Mark Robinson said, "We're thrilled to be announcing the first sailing members of Team GB. These athletes have all proven themselves in their class, and every single one of them is capable of returning from Tokyo 2020 with a medal in their hands."
Special feature.
Guiding light.
Former England footballer Dave Thomas now raises thousands for guide dogs after going blind.
Dave Thomas sits in the living room of his home on the edge of Lartington Village in Durham. He was born not far from here in West Auckland and came into being with a zest for life he's never lost. You see it in a smile undimmed by the decades, in a body that he still takes for a run on most days. Though it's late in the evening and we're indoors, he wears dark glasses. He was once a very good footballer. Take yourself inside Turf Moor on May the 13th, 1967. That Saturday afternoon, he made his debut for Burnley in the old First Division. At 16 years and 220 days, he was the youngest player to start a first-team game for the club in the top flight. That still holds. The following season, Don Revie, then manager of Leeds United, described Thomas as the brightest talent in England and possibly Europe. A winger, he was fast, skillful and an excellent crosser. He spent 7 seasons at Burnley, mostly good times that ended with a move in 1972 to Queen's Park Rangers. The London club was then in the old second division, but 4 years later they slugged it out with Liverpool for the first division title. By a single point, they lost. 8 times he played for England. People said it should have been more, not him. After QPR, he went to Everton and was provider-in-chief for Bob Latchford. That was the late summer of his career. Autumn wasn't so good. Wolves, Vancouver Whitecaps, Middlesbrough, and finally Portsmouth, stopping points on the road to somewhere else. The dark glasses shield his eyes, his damned eyes, that no longer do what they're meant to do. He remembers the jolt that foretold the rest. He and his wife Brenda were at Epsom on Oaksdale, walking among the crowd. I went through this tunnel and suddenly felt panic as if I couldn't stop myself walking into people. I said to Brenda, "You're going to have to get me out of here. There's too many people." She took me back to this tent where I sat on a chair and had a drink. Then I just needed to get out of there, and Brenda took me back to our daughter Helen, who lives in Epsom. I realised then I had a problem. I didn't want to be where there were lots of people. He tries to describe how it felt. Think of the horse that has been fitted with blinkers, so it only sees what is directly in front of it, or place your open hands to the sides of your eyes, eliminating your peripheral vision. Then try to walk through crowds of people. Glaucoma is a serious disease that can damage the optic nerve and lead to the loss of peripheral vision and eventually blindness. Things gradually got worse for Thomas. "Your fan mail's here," Brenda said one morning in 2008. There had always been a few, a Burnley, QPR or Everton supporter, wanting to remind him of somebody he'd once been. That morning there was a brown envelope. Inside, a letter from the DVLA. "Dear Mr. Thomas, we are sorry to inform you that you are unable to drive again." At that very moment, he'd been about to leave for Bishop Luffer School in Chichester, where he was a PE teacher. How would he get to work? How would he drive the boys at the school to their various matches? And so began the rest of his life. His sight deteriorated, and the day soon came when he was officially registered as a blind person. This is not to say he can see nothing, because he can still make out what is directly in front of him. Close to the television, he can see it's a football game and know what is happening. It is all the things he can't see that must now be reckoned with. While he tells matter-of-factly of the things he must look out for, a golden Labrador sits nearby, occasionally turning its head as if to check that he is okay. He is the first former professional footballer to be given a guide dog. Nodding towards her, he begins to sob. "We've been together for 2.5 years. He cannot speak about Hannah without getting emotional. "Before she came to me, I couldn't really live an independent life. That's what she's given me, independence. I've been to London on my own. I've been on the underground on my own, but I couldn't have done it on my own. Most Mondays I go into Barnard Castle. I go to the vet and get a weighed. You've got to be very disciplined with them because they are central to your life. Before I got Hannah, it was, 'Brenda, can you take me into Barnard Castle? Brenda, can you take me to the bus stop?' Now I set off and Hannah will take me straight to the bus stop. When we're walking and we get to a curb, she will stop and wait for my command. I will listen and my command is, 'Forward.' But I've got to stop and listen. If a car is coming along and I still want to go forward, she won't go. She enables me to feel safe when I'm out and about." On London's Underground, strangers constantly spoke to him, wanting to know about Hannah. They noticed that though Hannah sat quietly, she rarely took her eyes off her owner. Once somebody told him it was like the dog was in love with him. "I think she is. I can feel her eyes on me. Maybe she's responding to my need for her. She has landed a great home. But she deserves it because she's special. Wherever I go, she goes." I ask if he can compare how he felt the day he was called up to the England squad with the moment he was told he would get a guide dog. You set off on your football journey. You try to improve. Then you move on to something else. "This dog will stick with me for the rest of her life or the rest of my life." That's the best way I can describe it. One is temporary. The other is permanent. He sobs as he recalls his father's battle with glaucoma. He became totally blind before the end. "I don't know what the future holds regarding my sight. I cope with it. I'm very positive. Hannah sleeps on her bed on the floor beside our bed. She won't get up in the morning until I get up. I can't explain how good she is." Since Hannah came along, Thomas and Brenda set about raising money for guide dogs for the blind. Their £75,000 has meant 15 more guide dogs. When offered the chance to write a book about his story, he said he would do it on condition the proceeds from the book would go to guide dogs. Guiding Me, Home and Away will be published later this month. To understand how Thomas, 68, has dealt so positively with the loss of his sight, think of him as he was at 15. A kid who, with his dad's advice, agreed to a £4 a week plus digs deal to join Burnley, and who, with his dad, then refused a counter offer of £30 a week plus £2,000 signing on fee from Leeds United. £2,000 would have bought four houses on the street where he lived in West Auckland. Here's the remarkable part. He was 33 when his career ended. No regrets. He'd earned good money and set aside enough for a decent pension. Brenda was a teacher, and that helped. Wondering what to do with the rest of his life, he leant towards what he was passionate about. He'd always loved to see things grow. Grass, hedges, carrots, asparagus. He bought himself a 1958 Morris Minor van, so old and unloved, it had grass growing in the boot. Trimming the grass, he set off on a new life as a £4 an hour gardener, not telling any of his new customers he'd once played football for England. Of course, one thing leads to another, and when he was offered the chance to retrain as a PE teacher, he seized it. The loss of his sight destroyed that, but he's got on with it. Is still getting on with it. On a disused railway near his home, he goes for the daily run. Anne Dent, a neighbour, walks the same route and carries clippers in her pocket to cut away any low-lying branches that might catch him out. At the golf club, he puts the ball on the tee and hits it. His buddies are his eyes. He would like you to know that actually he's been fairly lucky.
Dave Thomas, A Life in Football.
1967.
Makes Burnley debut against Everton, aged 16 years and 220 days. The second youngest player ever to play for the club, and the youngest ever to play for them in the First Division.
1972.
Moves to Queen's Park Rangers, who finishes runners-up to Liverpool on the 1975-76 season.
1974.
First of eight England appearances.
1977.
Leaves QPR for Everton before joining Wolves in 1979.
1984.
Retires, age 33, his last club being Portsmouth.
Speedway.
Cubs in command as Cradley Heath crumble. Leicester's second team, the Lion Cubs, took a step closer towards a place in the National League playoff final with a resounding victory over Cradley Heath in Birmingham on Wednesday. The Lion Cubs took the first leg of the semi-final by 53 points to 37, and their lead places them in a commanding position ahead of the return match at Leicester tomorrow. The result was their highest score in an away match this year, and it was another display of togetherness and teamwork that has been their key to success all season. In 30 rides shared across the team, they dropped points in just 5 of the 15 heats. Only twice did the Cradley riders manage to score more points than the visitors. From the outset, the Lion Cubs delivered a hammer blow to their opponents when Ellis Perks swept into the lead, followed by Dan Thompson, who was then passed by Max Clegg, the Cradley Heath captain. Undeterred, the teenager recovered to re-pass Clegg to regain second place in what was a significant moment against the home side's top rider. More success followed for Thompson, the former Lions mascot who featured in 2 of the 4 occasions when maximum points were scored by his team. First of all, he and Ryan Terry Daly were too quick from the start against the Cradley pairing in the 8th heat, and then the youngster followed Perks across the finishing line in the race before the interval. After the break, Leicester immediately extended their lead to 16 points through Luke Riddock, who reached the checkered flag first, and behind him Joss Embleton worked his way up from third to second after overtaking Tom Spencer. In the remaining 3 heats, Cradley were unable to make headway in Leicester's lead and instead settled for a share of the points to leave themselves with much to do at the Paul Chapman and Sons Arena tomorrow.
Lions fight back to leave playoff semi-final in balance.
Leicester worked their way back from a potential huge first-leg deficit to keep their championship playoff semi-final match against Redcar Bears alive. The Lions ended up 49-41 down to the Bears in the away leg of the competition, with the decisive second leg at home on Saturday. On a surface made heavy by rain early in the day, it was the Bears who caught better with the conditions. Time after time, they were into the lead by the first corner to leave the Lions chasing the rear wheels of the home riders. By the end of the 5th heat, Leicester were on the ropes, and 3 heats later, the team had fallen behind by 14 points. However, a late fight back followed, and with it their first race advantage with a fortuitous engine failure for Richard Lawson handed Ryan Douglas and Joe Lawler a much-needed 4 points. The Lions riders then packed the minor positions over the next four heats to take a share of the points before Ty Proctor and Connor Mountain were awarded maximum points after the 14th race was stopped when Nathan Greaves fell. It was a lifeline for Leicester as Redcar's lead on the night was cut to 8 points, with one race remaining. In the final heat, Ryan Douglas made sure that Leicester did not slip further behind, the Australian managing to keep ahead of the Redcar's top two riders to end the night as the Lions' man of the match. Afterwards, the Watling JCB Lions team manager, Stuart Dixon, rued the slow start his team had made, but took encouragement that the deficit is not insurmountable. "It took us longer than I expected to get into our stride," said Dixon. "You had to get out of the starts to stand a chance of scoring points, and we were left wanting. I was a little worried when we went behind by 14 points, but as the meeting wore on, I could see we were coming more and more into better form, and in the end, we finished just 8 points down. We now have to plan towards the return match on Saturday at Leicester and winning on aggregate to go through to the final. We believe that pulling back 8 points on our own track is achievable and realistic. The tie is still very open and we will be giving it everything in our endeavour to reach our first playoff final. The second leg takes place at the Paul Chapman and Sons Arena on Saturday starting at 7:30 p.m.
It was a double celebration for Leicester's second team on Saturday as the Lion Cubs came through two matches at Cradley Heath
and the Stoke Potters with big wins to qualify for the finals of the National League playoffs and knockout cup competitions later this month. Faced with racing two important semi-finals in one night at the Paul Chapman and Sons Arena, the team began the first fixture in devastating form against Cradley Heath. Already 16 points ahead from their first leg semi-final win in Birmingham on Wednesday, the Lion Cubs tore into the visitors to go ahead 19-5 after five heats on the night. It was the best start the team had achieved this season and just about finished off the tie early on. With the momentum fully on their side, the Cubs went on to finish with their highest score of 64-26 and a thumping 117-63 win on aggregate. Ellis Perks led the way with four heat wins, and there were double-figure returns for Dan Yun-Hume and the Thompson twins, Dan and Joe. Leicester will now race against the Bellevue Aces from Manchester in the final of the playoffs to determine the 2019 National League champions. Lifted by their earlier success, the team resumed after the break against the Stoke Potters, and a win for Joe Thompson over the visitors' top rider, Tom Perry, set them on the path to another victory. The Stoke team, fresher from not having previously ridden a match, put up sterner resistance and managed to draw four out of the first nine races. But in between, Leicester outscored their opponents to go 34-20 ahead. Perry, aided by Connor Coles and Joe Lawler, kept the Potter score ticking over, but without greater support, they were unable to prevent the Lion Cubs from marching on towards an overwhelming score of 59-31 and 113-67 on aggregate. Leicester now await the outcome of the second semi-final between the Kent Kings and the Bellevue Aces as to who they will meet in the final of the Knockout Cup. Bellevue hold a four-point lead from the first leg raced in Manchester on Friday, and the two sides meet again tonight in the return tie.
You have now reached the end of the audio transcription of the back page. If you'd like to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone 0116 249 8839 and leave a message on the answering machine. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.